an ever-changing world, Life Changes Network presents A Voice of Truth and Inspiration, broadcasting on frequencies of love, laughter, and understanding, illuminating new paths for new directions as we, as one, strive for higher and higher planes of existence. Always remembering, life changes. This is radio like you've never felt before. And now, your host, our MC, our master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
Ciao, everyone. Mark, that was a great intro, by the way. I like that. Filippo Voltaggio. I am excited about today's show. We have a great guest on. It's Giorgio Tsoukalos. I love that name. It's Greek, of course. And he's going to be talking about Eric von Däniken's book, Twilight of the Gods, which has been making quite a splash, as a lot of Eric von Däniken's books do. But the reason he talks about his book is because they're great friends. He's Eric's right-hand man, and it's 4 o'clock in the morning for Eric right now. And plus, we wanted him on the show for his own right, because he himself is a producer and the star of his own show, and we'll talk about that in just a minute. You know, it's interesting. I recently had a conversation with a friend of mine who had been having some difficulties for quite some time, actually, 12 years to be exact. And she was telling me, well, she wasn't telling me anything. Well, she'd tell me the same thing over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. And I just didn't know how to help her. And then finally, 12 years after something happened to her that she considered horrible, which might have been a great thing, but she never considered it a great thing, so it never was. And so she dealt with all the issues that she had because that she couldn't consider it a great thing. Anyway, without getting into details, not that any of you know her, but I think the point can be made without getting into the details. I suggested to her that something was happening and that this was a good time for her to do such and such. And she got so cross and said, "No, I can't believe you're telling me this. You're my friend. You know how hard this has been for me. You know that this, this, and this." And I was now the bad guy because I was trying to help her in a way that she wasn't recognizing, and she thought I was just being the bad guy and not seeing her side, when I had known her side for 12 years. And I said to her, "But consider that maybe this, 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 and this." And she said, "No, if this were right, it would happen this way, and it would happen this way, and it would happen this way." And she was trying to convince me that what I was suggesting was so wrong and so bad. And I said to her, "Where are you getting this information? Or why do you have these rules?" And she said, "I have to listen to my gut. And my gut tells me that this is the wrong thing for me." Well, it's hard for me personally to argue against that, because I am a huge advocate of people listening to their guts. And I actually didn't know what to say. I thought, wow, if she's listening to her gut, then who am I to say? So we kind of ended the conversation. And then the next day, I called her up and I said, "What have you been listening to these past 12 years? Who has been giving you advice on how to be handling this situation that has caused you so much pain and trauma over the past 12 years?" And she said, "My gut." And then I knew she hadn't been listening to her gut. She'd been listening to her head that she thinks is her gut, because her gut would not have caused her to be in such trauma for 12 years over anything. I just know. And I said, "Well, guess what you're doing now? You're listening to that same head or quote unquote that gut, which has caused you all this problem for 12 years. It's not me who causes the problem or my gut, she says. It's that person. And I said, well, you're talking to the wrong person because I don't believe in blaming anybody for anything, first of all. And second, at least for not for 12 years, maybe for a minute. It might feel good or might be necessary for some people, but 12 years. So I said, consider that you haven't been listening to your gut, but you've been listening to your brain. And your brain might have caused you this problem to begin with. And your brain has continued to keep you in this problem for 12 years. And now your brain is not listening to what could conceivably be really good advice. And she said, but I feel it in my gut. And again, that's hard to argue. So I asked her, where do you feel all the other advice you're getting? And she says, in my gut. And knowing that the advice that she had been following, quote unquote, from her gut, had been leading her deeper and deeper down a rabbit hole, so to speak, I said, you might want to consider, and she raised her voice, so I raised my voice, and then she raised her voice, and then I raised my voice, and I'm Italian. You just, it just doesn't work. I think I could win that game. And she said, I can't believe you're yelling at me. I said, I'm not yelling at you. I'm trying to get through to the brain. And since you're raising your voice, I'm doing the same. And she said, I have to go with what my gut says. Well, a friend of mine said to talk to her higher self and stop calling her. So I did. I don't know if that helped. But I do know that she called me and she said, okay, I'm going to do what you told me to do. I'm going to eat my liver. I'm going to go against what my gut says. And I said, never go against what your gut says. But you're not listening to your gut. Your gut is asking you to go. And she went. And I didn't hear from her for a week. I expected her to call and yell at me and tell me, I told you so. Or I expected her to call me and say thank you, but nothing. So I called her and I said, hello. And she said, okay, you were right. I said, I was. I said, you mean it wasn't supposed to happen like this and like this and like this, like you thought it was supposed to happen? She said, no, actually, Filippo, it couldn't have been more perfect. And I think she had a really good friend who really cared and who really was connected to her and to the situation and to whatever, higher self or whatever, to be able to get through to her, to do what her gut was probably actually wanting her to do all along. But for those of us who don't have that, or for those of us, better yet, who think we're listening to our guts, then maybe we should reconsider and look at the track history of that quote-unquote gut or that quote-unquote higher self that we think we're listening to and see if it's really our ego or our brain trying to justify things. Because for this friend, after 12 years, to have this lifted from her and for her to feel so differently, and you should just see her now, and she's just the happiest person and always could have been, but for 12 years wasn't, because she was listening to what she thought was her gut. And listening to your gut is a great thing. I just say, look at your gut's track history and see if it's really your gut talking, because your gut and your heart know, but usually most people aren't connected to that. And unfortunately, I speak from experience, other people's and mine. So with that, I want to remind everybody that you're listening to Filippo Voltaggio on Life Changes with Filippo. We're here every Monday night at 7 p.m. on the BBS Radio Network. You can learn more about us by going to lifechanges.ws. And of course, you could visit us on Facebook and connect with us on Twitter and YouTube and many, many more places. As a matter of fact, we're working on a place ourselves. We're working on a network that we hope to be able to share with you and the world very soon. So tonight, as I mentioned earlier, we're excited to be introducing our guest to you, our fans and our audience, but he needs very little introduction in the world because he is very well known. He and who's an author, Twilight of the Gods, actually, Eric von Däniken, have co-created some amazing things that we're going to be talking about today on the show. I'll tell you a little bit about him. His name is Giorgio Tsoukalos. I love that name. It's Greek, and I just love it. So Giorgio Tsoukalos is the star and consulting producer of Ancient Aliens, the series. And actually, it's in its second season right now on the History Channel. He is also the publisher of Legendary Times Magazine, the only ancient astronaut publication in the world. And Giorgio is a real-life Indiana Jones. He has been so many places in the world. And he is changing the way the world thinks about the ancient astronaut theory. Now, for over 12 years, Giorgio has also been the director of the Eric von Däniken Center for Ancient Astronaut Research. So let me just say one more thing. As the world's leading ancient astronaut expert, Giorgio has starred in and appeared on the History Channel, the Travel Channel, the National Geographic Channel, the Sci-Fi Channel, Coast to Coast AM, where I just heard him recently and thought, we have to have him on the show, and many other international television and radio programs, such as UFO Hunters and Ancient Aliens, reporting about the latest discoveries in the ancient astronaut field. Now, I can't wait to just get into the conversation. So with that, Giorgio, welcome to the show.
Molte grazie. I'm very happy to be here.
Well, it is our pleasure. We've been wanting you on for a while, but you're such a busy man, and you're doing so many things, I almost don't know where to start. But I'm going to say, what is an ancient astronaut?
Well, an ancient astronaut, pretty much, is the idea whether or not, or the question whether or not extraterrestrials visited Earth in the remote past.
Okay, so we're not talking John Glenn here.
No, even though, or Buzz Aldrin or someone like that. But John Glenn does qualify for an ancient astronaut because the other two, Aldrin and Armstrong, they haven't been up there in a very long time. So was it Glenn went up there, 8 years ago or something like this? 10 years ago, something like that. He went up there. And, that's pretty remarkable that he had the guts and the stamina to do this. I mean, it's really amazing.
Hmm.
But, all around the world, we have these descriptions of gods from the ancient past. And the archaeologists, essentially, what they're saying is that, all these ancient monuments, they were all built in reverence of the gods, and all these texts were written to worship the gods and things like that, and then gods this, gods that, and case closed, let's go home, mystery solved. Well, nothing's been solved, because the question should be, all right, so if all this stuff that our ancestors did was done, in the name of those gods, well, the most important question we should ask is, who are these gods, or who were these gods, and where did they come from? Because our ancestors, they built some amazing stuff. And to me, what mainstream archaeology suggests today is that all of those god stories or gods' stories were nothing else but a figment of our ancestors' imagination. And I say to that, absolute nonsense. Because if they were just, invisible thoughts, then that is not compelling enough to, for example, build the pyramids or, build a whole bunch of other massive monuments when the stories behind those monuments always talk about these gods descending from the sky and teaching mankind in various disciplines. And so, long story short, ancient astronauts pretty much are flesh and blood extraterrestrials who came here in nuts and bolts spaceships, who whom our ancestors misinterpreted as gods, as being divine and magical. Not because our ancestors were stupid, but because, technologically speaking, they were primitive. And so Arthur C. Clarke really said it best. There's a famous 1961 quote that says, in which he said, any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. And that's exactly what happened 5 or 10,000 years ago.
Wow, I had never heard that, and I like that a lot, actually. Eric von Däniken, who you work with very closely, I know you're his right-hand man, and like we mentioned earlier, you are the director of the Eric von Däniken Center for Ancient Astronaut Research. Well, he's written many books, and they've been sold to over 63 million people. And the latest one is Twilight of the Gods, the Mayan Calendar and the Return of the Extraterrestrials. Now, in the beginning of the book, he talks about a particular place, and I want to ask about that in just a moment. But I liked how, first of all, you wrote the foreword, right?
Yes, I did.
Right. Well, if you want to mention anything on that, I'll ask my question, then if you can bring that all together for us. In the preface, he talks about being a child and hearing the story of Lucifer and God having an argument. And
yes.
It's a really interesting story. Without, you know, going too deep into it, you know, can you net that out for us? Because it's a perspective that I never thought of.
Yeah, no, and it would be my pleasure to you know, explain that to you or look at that from an ancient astronaut perspective. And basically, what the ancient astronaut theory suggests is that all of today's religions, the big three, are based in a complete fabrication, in a complete misunderstanding of actual events that took place, but that those events did not take place on a quote-unquote divine or magical level, but they took place on a very physical plane with flesh and blood extraterrestrials who came here in nuts and bolts spaceships, whom our ancestors thought that those appearances were divine or godlike in nature, which they never were because they simply did not comprehend the technological aspects behind those visits. Because, you know, our frame of reference today is vastly different than the frame of reference of our ancestors, let's say 5,000 years ago. So if in the Bible we have a story about, you know, God fighting Lucifer and then, you know, casting out Lucifer, and over time Lucifer becomes Satan and he becomes the devil and things like this, I mean, I'm sorry, that's all folklore. The devil in that sense does not exist. Yes, evil exists, but, you know, the whole stories did you hear sometimes in court, well, the devil made me do it. I mean, those people, I'm sorry, are genuinely insane. So, you know, according to the ancient astronaut, I mean, first of all, Lucifer means bringer of light, and Lucifer was one of God's quote-unquote angels. Now, do angels exist the way we think they do today? The answer is absolutely not. Angels, too, were misinterpreted, misunderstood, flesh and blood extraterrestrials. And, of course, those extraterrestrials knew exactly what they were doing. I mean, it's just like if we were to arrive 1,000 years from now, if we were to arrive on another planet and we would, you know, encounter some intelligent humanoid life, well, you know, and let's also say that that life is technologically primitive. Mm-hmm. Well, what will we do? Will we just stand back and watch, or will we, you know, show them a couple of things? Well, at first, we will observe. But then, after a month or two, we will interfere with their development because human beings have nothing better to do than always, always, always poke around at stuff and, you know, do this and do that. So, instantaneously, when we make contact, to them, we are gods. We are godlike. And eventually, 5,000 years in their future, we humans, our our once very physical visit will be thrown into the realm of mythology, because that could have never happened. Ancient astronauts do not exist, even though we one day, humans, will become ancient astronauts on another planet. So this whole idea about, you know, God fighting or having this rift with Lucifer, it's nothing else but a misunderstood fabrication where, you see, personally, I'm a very deep believer in God. However, it has nothing to do with the God that's described in the Old Testament, because whatever or whoever was described in the Old Testament wasn't God. It was a flesh and blood extraterrestrial whom our ancestors thought was God or God-like, and that person or that individual knew that, and they took full advantage. They tricked our ancestors into submission by, you know, saying, I am your God, and you cannot worship anyone else. Because, you know, the whole question about God, it transcends the Bible, it transcends the Quran, it transcends the Torah. I mean, it's way bigger than what it can, that it can be, that this question or the idea about God could be ever confined in a man-made, let me repeat, man-made book. So I went all over the place on this answer. So
No, not at all. I'm just thinking you must be real popular in the Bible Belt.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And you know, but you know what? That's okay when there's disagreement, because, look, like I said, I'm a deep believer in God. And see, to me, you know, if you take a piece of, you know, let's say a piece of skin or something that's organic, and then you take a piece of rock, which allegedly is inorganic. One is alive, one is dead. And you put both pieces underneath an electron microscope, and you go deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. At the very core, at the center of it all, you cannot tell the difference between the two items. They're all the same, because at our core, everything vibrates, everything wobbles, everything oscillates. It's all about harmonics. So it's all the same. So in my opinion, you know, God is way bigger than the Bible, that God is the universe, and we all belong to the universe, and we're all one, essentially. And that, like Carl Sagan said, you know, we are made of star stuff, and we really are. I mean, it's truly amazing. And so to me, you see, creation and whatever and whenever this might have happened is way more magnificent than what, you know, many Christians, Muslims, and Hebrew Jews think today. So, you know, it's very confining to say, well, the Bible, this is the word of God. Because, I'm sorry, it isn't. Because according to the ancient texts, not only did those extraterrestrials teach us in various academic disciplines, but they also gave us moral values and ideas about what's right and what's wrong. And, I mean, Moses, when he went up and you know, came back down and then wrote the Ten Commandments, I mean, right. That was not given to God, to him, but by extraterrestrials. Here, this is how your civilization, you know, should interact with each other. These are the basics. Go at it. Have fun.
Yeah, I don't remember if I read it in this book or someplace else, but the fact that he came back with Moses came back with gray hair was that maybe he had met with nuclear power or something like that.
With glowing skin, absolutely.
Right.
And so there are all these bizarre references in ancient texts where, you know, radioactive poisoning is described, where, you know, people come in contact either with the quote-unquote glory of the Lord, or they come in contact, for example, with the Ark of the Covenant, and days later, they start losing their hair, they start losing their nails, and they have these bizarre boils on their skin. And I'm really sorry. Let's look at that stuff from a modern-day perspective, and there is only one thing that causes these symptoms, and that's radioactive poisoning.
Hmm.
Now, how would anybody know this in the past?
So you're almost saying, like, for example, a child's experience of the world when they recount as something that happened, and then this happened, and then this happened, as if it was all magical, and the parent, of course, knows what took place in order to make those things happen for the child to look so magical to them. But you're saying, in a sense, let's grow up and realize that we can't look through the eyes of a child anymore?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, just 3 weeks ago, on October 14th, in New York City, for the first time there was it happens on multiple occasions, but this time it actually made it into the news. There was a massive sighting of three UFOs in the sky above Manhattan. And so at night, when that news bit, you know, was reported on the news, for the first time there was no Twilight Zone music in the background. There was no talk about little green men. It was a bona fide news item where people, the reporters, asked, well, what the heck was this? So, you know, here's the difference. If extraterrestrials were to show up today in UFOs or in whatever they would arrive here, we would know instantaneously that those visitors are extraterrestrials, that they are not gods. They might have very superior advanced technology far ahead of ours, obviously, since they can traverse the vast distances between the stars, but they're not gods. There is no reason for us to bow down and worship them with an altar or nonsense like this, because our technological frame of reference today comprehends this nuts and bolts technology of those extraterrestrials that, you know, arrive today or will arrive or are here or will in the future come here or whatever. But that was not the case for our ancestors. I mean, they were highly intelligent because, you know, the brain has not changed in the last 15,000 years. It's all the same brain. But the frame of reference was simply different, and so they had to describe stuff that they saw that was very odd with vocabulary that they had at their disposal at the time.
But
so
Georgia,
of course we have,
sorry.
And so of course we have flying chariots, and we have flying furnaces, and flying shields, and really bizarre stuff, but let's be honest here. Shields do not fly. So, you know, what is it? And you know, flying horses also do not exist with flying chariots or flying furnaces. What is it? And, you know, in our opinion, it was ancient astronauts.
Well, technically, if ancient astronauts could exist, if aliens could exist, flying horses could exist, technically.
But sure.
We're not
you that.
We're not talking Santa Claus here, you know, a man that flies around in with reindeer and gives toys to children, and it's fun once a year, and we can believe in that. We're talking God. We're talking the God that made us in his own image, and that rules our lives and brings the good or, you know, allows bad to happen. I don't know. But this is indelible in people's souls. It's not Santa Claus. I mean, you're talking everything is what we've been taught, no matter what religion that exists.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And so this is why, you know, this whole thing is so controversial. Because, I mean, look, even in the New Testament, there's one point where Jesus said, my Father's home has many rooms, or my Father's world has many mansions. I mean, you could interpret that as, right, so Earth is one mansion, and there are different mansions all throughout the galaxy or universe with other life forms. Because, let's be honest, if we really were the only intelligent beings in our galaxy or even in the universe, as some scientists believe, I mean, that to me would be an insult in the face of creation, because it basically means that God didn't, you know, that she couldn't do any better. And I don't think that that is the case. You know, the requirements for life are basically set. They're the same. It's a given set of circumstances that apply throughout the entire universe. And, you know, if we suggest that the universe is infinite, mathematically speaking, that means that there is infinite life out there. So, you know, to suggest that we're alone. You see, look, in the 1960s, it was very taboo to even talk about extraterrestrial life. Now, it's pretty much accepted amongst mainstream scientists to talk about extraterrestrial life, but what is taboo at the moment is that that extraterrestrial life is so far away that there is no way that they could have ever been here or are here right now. Give it another 30 years, and even that opinion will change.
Mm. Well, you say that with confidence, and I like that. And when we come back, I want to ask you about a particular place that's referenced in the book Twilight of the Gods by Eric von Däniken, Puma Punku. I want to remind everybody that we're talking to Giorgio Tsoukalos, who is the star and consulting producer of Ancient Aliens, the series, and publisher of Legendary Times magazine. As a matter of fact, if you're interested in the magazine, if you're interested in the series, or you're interested in Eric von Däniken's book that we're discussing today with Giorgio, Twilight of the Gods, The Mayan Calendar and the Return of the Extraterrestrials, you can go to legendarytimes.com. That's legendarytimes.com, times with an S. And, of course, you could always get that information if you can't find it or don't know how to spell it at lifechanges.ws, our website, and go to this particular interview, which will actually be up in a few days in our archives for you to listen to and share with all of your friends. All of this information, whether you believe in it or don't believe in it, it's a conversation that we're having that is above and beyond the conversations that we've had on this kind of topic in the past. So I'm really glad to be having it. I want to remind everybody that you are listening to Filippo Voltaggio on Life Changes with Filippo. We're here every Monday night at 7 p.m. on the BBS radio network. And, of course, not only can you connect with us at our website, lifechanges.ws, but through Twitter, on our Facebook page, on our individual fan pages, and at Life Changes with Filippo Facebook fan page. And then, of course, finally on YouTube at the moment under Filippo Voltaggio. You can go to lifechanges.ws to figure out how to spell that. But with that, I'd like to come back to, from an Italian name to a Greek name, George Tsoukalos, as we are here talking about actually several different things, but one of them is Twilight of the Gods, Eric von Däniken's latest book. So, Giorgio, in the book, it starts off talking about a very special place called Puma Punku. Where is it, and why is it important?
Well, Puma Punku is by far one of the most fascinating places in the world, and it's right on the border between Peru and Bolivia. It's on the Bolivian side, right next to Lake Titicaca, which is the highest navigable lake in the world.
And I have to say, if you think it's one of the most fascinating places in the world, it really must be, because I want to share with the audience that you've been to over 54 countries and counting, I take it.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, it's very difficult for me because one of the questions I'm always asked is, well, what's your favorite archaeological site? What's your favorite this? And that really is a very hard question because, yes, you go to the pyramids and you're dumbfounded. Yes, you go to the Nazca lines and you're stunned. So, you know, you can't really say, well, this is my favorite. But, you know, in regards to impossibility of asking the question, how was this done? Puma Punku takes the cake because, you know, we're at 13,000 feet altitude, which means, number one, the air is very rarefied, and number two, I didn't explain to what we have there. We have this gigantic field of ruins with gigantic stones some of which upwards, that weigh upwards of 80 tons, metric tons. And they've all been cut from a granite quarry, have been transported there 80 miles over wow. hills and over valleys, and just absolute craziness. And those stone blocks feature such precise cuts that we today would have very much difficulties to replicate this.
Now, and this was all done by primitive people?
Allegedly, yes. And see, here's the thing, that the indigenous population that still lives there, they're called the Aymara Indians. They themselves say that when we stumbled across this, this Puma Punku place, this place was already in ruins. It has been in ruins since before the beginning of time. Mm. I mean, that's pretty amazing for them to say, because they're very adamant about their oral traditions and their, legends and myths. And so, you see, right next to Puma Punku, there is another site about 150 yards away called Tiwanaku. And Tiwanaku, there are hundreds and hundreds of books that have been written about Tiwanaku, which is very much an Incan site. It's got some beautiful gates. It's got beautiful carvings of faces and flowers, and there's a whole bunch of glyphs. Really beautiful. However, only 150 meters or yards away, there you have Puma Punku, and it's completely anonymous. Not a single hieroglyph, not a single carving of a flower or of a face, and it's most certainly pre-Incan. And still today, academics fight with each other because no one knows what the ultimate answer is as to who were these pre-Inca. And we have, you've seen the pictures in the book. I mean, there's some amazing stuff out there that, I've talked to modern-day stonemasons. I showed them these pictures, and then when I told them this is made of granite, they said, look, not even for a big amount of money would I even dare to try to replicate this. Now, who am I going to listen to? The real-life stonemason who cuts stones every day, or the professor?
Now, this is actually, let's go one step further, actually. Is this the city that was actually supposedly built in a day, something like that?
Yes, exactly. And you're referring to some of the local legends that go along with that particular place, that it was all built in one night. Now, was it really built in one night? I doubt it. However, you see, we are not negating or we're not saying that ancient man did not know how to cut stone. Because, of course, ancient man knew how to cut stone. Because you know what? Most of these monuments are built out of limestone and sandstone and very porous stone. So, yes, you can cut those stones with, primitive tools. However, that's not what I'm interested in at all. I mean, God bless them for having cut limestones. It's fantastic. It's great. But what we're saying is that, there's no way that they knew how to cut granite, diorite, andesite, all these very igneous hard rocks, where today, in order for cutting granite, we are using diamond-tipped tools.
Mm.
And, we're told this, all this was done with copper chicken bones and with string. I mean, nonsense, because I'm very much at the forefront of agreeing with many scientists when they come forward with their theories. Because professors and archaeologists, they are doing a wonderful job. In fact, most of the stuff that they do is just fuel for the ancient astronaut theory, not against it. And so the crazy thing is that, they are doing a great job, but unfortunately they are blind or choose to remain blind when the obvious answer is right in front of your nose, that we today could not, I repeat, could not replicate with our modern technology some of the stuff our ancestors did allegedly with chicken bones. And it's complete nonsense, because the ancient texts are saying that most of these ancient monuments were in fact built by human beings, but with the assistance of the guardians of the sky. And the guardians of the sky had these quote-unquote magical tools that they taught mankind how to use, and mankind built this stuff, but it wasn't, the tools weren't magical. It was a misunderstanding. It was pure technology.
Certainly an iPhone or something like that would be magical to people even 50 years ago, 60 years ago, before computers were invented. So I understand where you're going. And you mentioned Ancient Aliens. Of course, that's the series, and congratulations that it's on its second season. And I have friends that you're welcome. I thank you for producing it. You're the executive, you're everything. You're the star and the consulting producer. So it's just to let the audience know, if they don't, it's on Thursday nights at 10 p.m. and 9 p.m. Central, and it's on the History Channel. And this Thursday will be episode 3, which is Underwater Worlds. And it's kind of exciting. It's also unfortunate that we're actually a couple blocks away and we didn't get to meet each other this time around. You're up in L.A. because you're filming episodes 8, 9, and 10, so you're right in the middle of production.
Yes, we are. In fact, it's really amazing, because as you've just mentioned,
I know
on Thursday, episode 3 is already airing. So all these shows, they're already airing, and here we are. We're still, filing away at the last 3 episodes, and it's a very exciting time right now.
It is exciting. And actually, in the remaining couple minutes that we have together here, tell us. Obviously, so much of what you've shared with us is fodder for the show and is brought up in the show. But give us an idea of some of the things that we have to look forward to in the next coming episodes.
Yeah, I mean, for the Underwater World episode, we've visited an underwater city off of the coast of Okinawa in Japan called Yonaguni. And it's about 6 to 20 feet underwater, and it's this massive structure that obviously, was carved out of a natural formation, but the steps and the blocks that we see or will see definitely have been cut and were man-made, artificially. And also off of the coast of French Brittany, there are many, many stone circles that are now submerged underwater. And even more exciting, off of the coast of India, over 10 cities, big cities, have been found that are now completely underwater. So what does that mean? Well, it's two things. Either our ancestors had scuba gear while they were building the stuff, or it was done when the water levels around the world were much lower. And that was 14,000 years ago. According to mainstream archaeologists, 14,000 years ago, we were sitting up in trees munching on bananas.
As monkeys, right? I get that.
So you can't, you can't have it both ways. And why would you? Even if you did have scuba gear, what on earth would propel you or compel you to build a city underwater? It makes absolutely no sense. So the bottom line is that our history is way different than what we're being taught in school today. And all we do is we ask questions. And if some of these questions are uncomfortable, so be it. It's okay.
Well, thank you for bringing up the uncomfortable topics and having us look at things very differently. Just before we go here, we have our producer, Mark Lejeure, who's sitting here, has been with great interest listening, and he has a question before you go.
Yes.
Thank you. Hi, Giorgio. How are you?
Very well. How about you?
Wonderful. Thank you for all the wonderful information. I resonate with everything you say. I became a fan of yours through the Ancient Alien series. That was the first I had come to learn of your work and what you're up to, and I applaud you for that. I have a bit of a scientific background myself, and I look at things from what I call as the law of probabilities. you know, what's possible, the same the same way, you know, and I have long had a challenging look at things like these monolithic structures. Yeah, my father worked at NASA for 30 years, and I've been around a lot of science, and I have a pretty good idea of what is possible, what we are capable of doing, etc. So I really enjoy your perspective on these things, and then even more importantly, that you've been there and witnessed them yourself. I think my question is my curiosity that has to do with the very topic you were talking about in terms of these structures that are now being largely discovered and explored underwater. And then you get back into those misinterpreted lore and mythology and a lot of the ancient scripture. My question is, we have looked at, I'm going after the theories that surround Atlantis and other early or ancient civilizations. Do you believe, or is my thinking congruent with yours, that the possibility exists that Atlantis was not a city off the coast out there in that one location, but yet maybe a part or a central capital or the representation of a global civilization where these types of structures seem to be too closely matched in their technology and being discovered all over the world, and that there may be an overlap there with not only the discovery of the architecture and the monolithic structures, but also then the history and the travels of Noah and the Ark and things of this nature.
Yeah, no, and you just mentioned something very significant in your question, and that is that, you know, globally, the further you go back in time, the more the masonry style is not necessarily the same, but it is actually, or similar, but it is actually identical. It doesn't matter if you go to South America, or if you go to Egypt, or if you go to Europe, or if you go to the Scandinavian countries, there are Inca walls all over the world, for example. Even, you know, now we call them Inca walls. In the past, we used to call them, to be called Cyclopean walls or giant walls and things like this. And so, yes, is it possible that Atlantis played a role in this? All I can say is that a possible answer or possible answers are given to the Atlantis question this Thursday. So please tune in, and you'll see what I mean. But at the same time, you know, in our opinion, it is as if all of our ancestors went to the same masonry school, because, you know, not only did they build in an identical fashion, but, you know, while they were at it, I mean, logic would suggest that if you want to build something and you're, you know, technologically speaking, quote-unquote primitive, that you would start out small. But you see, the deeper you go back in time, the larger the stone blocks are. Down in Baalbek, Lebanon, there's a stone that weighs approximately 1,800 tons. Mm. And our ancestors allegedly moved the stuff around with chicken bones and with string. And that's complete nonsense to even.
No, it was on their
that.
Back, Giorgio.
Oh, I'm sorry, yes. And they also used wooden rollers. Oh, which I forgot to mention, the wooden roller theory, for example, does not even work in Pumapunku, because we're at 13,000 feet. That means we're above the natural tree line. There never were and never will be any trees up there where you could have, you know, cut off a forest and used the tree trunks as wooden rollers. Mm. So, you know, I mean, it is, look, something happened in our past, and that's the question that we're trying to answer. That's the mystery, the quest that we're after, because it's certainly not the way we think it was. And I think this is the time when mankind awakens to these things, and I think it's a very amazing time to be living in right now.
Indeed, and Giorgio, something is happening in our present because you are bringing up this information and raising these questions and helping us find some answers. And we appreciate you at Life Changes, and we're so glad you joined us today in the middle of your busy production schedule. And we look forward to having you on again and hopefully getting to meet you in person and doing something live.
Absolutely. No, it would be my pleasure.
Total. All right, Giorgio. Have a great evening. Thanks again.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity. Bye-bye.
Our pleasure. We've been talking to Giorgio Tsoukalos, the star and consulting producer of Ancient Alien, the series. And the book we've been discussing is Twilight of the Gods, written by Eric von Däniken. So to learn more about him, you can always go to our website at lifechanges.ws, but theirs is legendarytimes.com. Mark, isn't that fascinating?
I absolutely think it's fascinating. You know what's even more fascinating to me the more I listen to him talk is that this isn't a normal way of thinking.
No.
That it's all around us. As if you watch that series, the symbology that exists, the physical limitations that we even have today with our modern technology, using modern in quotes, and yet we pass that off and continue to argue over information that isn't even relevant to these topics.
That's like being hungry and driving past trees and trees of apples and pears and saying, I'm so hungry, there's no food. We're looking for answers, and some of the clues are right in front of us.
It's a very good point. I think this is one thing that we're learning. I know it's a topic that you and I have shared, and we talk about this to some of our guests, which is seeing what you're ready to see. And I think that's what it comes down to. And so it's a very much part and parcel to the awakening that's going on. The people are starting to recognize this and maybe more importantly, are willing to recognize it.
You know, I wonder if it's also, I like how you put that, but I wonder if it's also like, you know, we've been taught you can't eat apples and you can't eat pears and you can't eat oranges. So you just drive by the trees thinking, well, I wish there were food. I'm hungry, but I can't eat that. So I wish I had answers, but I've been told that those aren't answers.
That's a very good point. You know, I'm a big fan of how we think based on our programming, and our programming is what we've learned and experienced. And you're right. If you've been taught something is one way, until you learn differently, you're going to operate based on that belief system. So that's a good point.
You know, and I don't blame people, because, you know, I grew up with a lot of the stories that he shared and knowing I could have quoted the same stories, but I would say what they mean to me from the aspect of the religion that I grew up in. So I understand how do you just all of a sudden say, oh, well, that's not true.
I think it comes down to the fact that you don't. I think before, I think there was an operating mechanism that was largely derived by fear. You know, if you look at information and the way that information travels today, and the internet and the connectivity and the ability to kind of seek out information on your own, it's a very different day and age than it was 10 years ago, 50, 100 years ago? How about when the church and or other political influence were having people killed due to their beliefs that the stars or the planets traveled in a certain direction, or that the world was flat versus round, or anything that challenged conventional wisdom? Well, now you challenge this wisdom, and people have the opportunity to explore the information and search their soul and do so in at least largely, obviously this still exists even to today, but in a largely fearless environment where they have the ability to explore and learn.
You know, that's really interesting. You started off by saying even 10 years ago, which is not that long ago, but you're absolutely right, because one of the huge differences is, especially with iPhones and internet connection, whatever, with your phones, when somebody says, did you know that such and such was built and said, no, I don't think it was. And you sit there and you Google it or you Yahoo it right there, right in the middle of the conversation. And that wasn't possible 10 years ago. You'd either have to believe the teacher or believe the one book you're reading. So you're right, even 10 years ago. Just imagine 10 years from now.
Yeah, information wasn't readily available for that long, much less the fact that the general global population is just now starting to be connected. You know, and thank gosh, the speed of connectivity is happening at such a rapid rate that you know, now, you know, we look at this as commonplace. But you know, a major portion of this planet couldn't access information, or the only information they were accessing was what they were being told. by anything from their parents and teachers to their information minister or whoever it may be.
Wow. And yet at the same time, sometimes I think, oh, there's just too much information. I can't read that much and that fast, and I don't have that time, and it's there for me, and I want to know.
That's also a very good point. You know, for all the good the technology has done, we have created such a complex environment, and that's what comes from that is the stress, and how many people say, boy, I wish I didn't have my pagers or my phone, or I'm always available, and now we carry our whole office on our hip and our smartphones and our iPads and our whatever devices we have, because we, 24 hours a day we can access. We have a global banking system. We have global businesses. We can be reached all day long. We have lights, so we can work at any hour of the day. You know, so we have the speed and the ferocious nature of our lives is by part and parcel to that same technology.
And as some would say, that's the good news, and that's the bad news. But actually, there is news, and that is that our show is it's time for us to close. And I could go on for hours, and we do. We have these conversations. This is the kind of thing that we personally care about, and that's why we're doing this here at Life Changes. And we are excited that you enjoyed our guests. I did. George Tsoukalos, and I know you all did because I'm getting emails already. And you're going to enjoy our next week's guest, who is going to be John Michael Capaldi, who is a famous psychic out of Scottsdale, Arizona. And you'll learn more about him next week, or you can go to our website at lifechanges.ws to learn more about him. Remember, keep the conversation going during the week by visiting us there at our website or on Facebook or on Twitter. We love to connect with you. And we just want to remind you that today's show has been made it possible in part by our sponsors, IonWay's Water Systems and Love and Miracles. I am Filippo Voltaggio, and it has been my pleasure being of service by hosting Life Changes with Filippo today. I, along with our segment hosts and producers, Dorothy Lee, Donahue, and Mark Lejeur, and our engineer, Seth, thank you for joining us and being part of the show and being part of the change we all wish to see in the world. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to Life Changes with the Master of Change, Filippo Voltaggio. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and visit us on the web at www.lifechanges.ws. Also, you can follow our community on Facebook at Life Changes. Once again, join us here next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, Life Changes.